No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this 21st day of January, the first full day of the Biden-Harris administration in Washington. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. Amid the ocean of tweets streaming during yesterday's inaugural events was one from a reporter on scene who described an off-the-cuff sensation. "Suddenly, Washington feels like it used to," she tweeted, as she observed the polite rituals of Democrats and Republicans, familiar politicians, and a sprinkling of celebrities gathered for the executive transition with all of its pomp and ceremony. Despite the tone of bipartisan lightness, to borrow the words of a New York Times writer, Wednesday was, of course, nothing like the old Washington in so many other ways. Socially distanced, face masks obscuring emotions, and most strikingly, the way the event was designed around security. It was an event that both sought to keep crowds out while trying to bring Americans together. A little later in our broadcast, we'll return to the rituals and rhetoric of an historic inauguration day. But as President Biden has gotten down to business so quickly, so must we. Hours after his inauguration and his first acts as president, Biden took steps to begin dismantling the policies of the Trump administration on issues ranging from the pandemic to the environment, the economy, and more. Some 17 executive actions in all, including orders, memos, and proclamations. To explore these changes, we're joined by Rebecca Dean. She is chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Texas in Arlington. Professor Dean, thanks for speaking with us today.
It's so good to be with you.
And Carlos Huerta is a professor of political science at Texas A&M University in Corpus Christi. Professor Huerta, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Before we talk about the mechanics of the transition, let's focus for just a moment on what it is that Americans saw. Do you think that the sense of history, the first woman ever elected to the vice presidency, a black woman and a person of South Asian descent, do you think that that sense of history was actually captured yesterday in the inauguration?
Well, yes, I do. I thought that the way that the everything was set up, just with the different people speaking, the different acknowledgments, and I think people did understand the historic moment of what we had with Vice President Harris being inaugurated. And I thought, you know, having, you know, just so many different people represented up on the stage during the production, I thought that made a big difference.
Did you get that same sense, Professor Dean?
I sure did. You know, if you think about the musical performers, you had, you know, J-Lo, you had Garth Brooks, you had Lady Gaga. It really sort of spanned the breadth of American popular culture, and each of them representing in their own way that was sort of unique to their genre and to their brand. Yeah, I was really impressed.
Before we move on to talk about President Biden's first day in office, that transition also included Mr. Trump's last day in office, granting 73 pardons and 70 commutations. I don't think that includes some of the earlier commutations and pardons. I'm thinking of Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, for example. Professor Huerta, what do you make of this last round of pardons?
Well, I was looking at something on this, and Andrew Weissman, writing for Just Security, noted that several of the pardons were written very narrowly, specifically for crimes that folks had committed. And so, you know, the one for Flynn was written very broadly, but some others were much more narrow just for those particular crimes. And so in this article suggesting that, you know, prosecutors could still try folks for crimes that they weren't convicted of. So there's other things that went on there. And I thought notably none of the folks connected with the insurrection on January the 6th seem to have been part of these pardons.
Professor Dean, did you see anything extraordinary in the issues of issuance of pardons and commutations at the end of this term?
I thought it was really interesting. There was sort of a bookend of the pardons. You know, the very first pardon he issued was Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And then at the end, you have a lot of these folks who are really close to the Trump world. You had some of the more, air quotes here, ordinary pardons that we might have seen in other administrations in the middle. But what I was really struck by as you compare this to other administrations was that there were fewer. Most of them were pardons and not commutations, and they largely centered around either folks close to Trump or those sort of, you know, first, second degree of separation, and didn't go through the traditional Department of Justice pardoning office.
Interesting. You know, it was interesting to me that despite having an inaugural address that was very much aimed at unifying the nation and with a message of compromise, one of the first orders of business for Mr. Biden was basically pushing aside President Trump's legacy, or much of that legacy. Let's begin with what stood out to you. I'm thinking the pandemic efforts, Professor Huerta. What stood out to you?
Well, what stood out to me was that elections have consequences. Much of the Trump administration and President Trump's legacy was centered around executive orders and not legislative accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And so when you do that, when the next president comes in, as I mentioned, you know, elections have consequences. They can undo many of these things. So thinking about the border wall, thinking about things dealing with COVID-19, the World Health Organization, the Paris Climate Treaty, Dreamers, if that's all executive orders from the previous administration, the next administration can undo those things and start and meeting the goals of that incoming administration. And I think you saw the first steps of that yesterday when President Biden was issuing all those executive orders.
Yes, Mr. Biden reinstating ties with the World Health Organization, for example, you were mentioning, and not a national mask mandate as such, but he is requiring social distancing and the wearing of masks on all federal property. The steps like those seem to be more symbolic than anything else. Would you agree, Professor Dean, especially given that so much of government has been shut down right now?
I think that's right. I think President Biden is trying to walk a line between, as Professor Wich was saying, trying to establish his own policy and direction that he wants for the country, but also not to get afoul of legal ramifications, right? There's been some talk about whether or not a national mask mandate would survive legal challenges, and he doesn't want that trouble right now. So I think he's trying to, in ways where he can move definitively, like putting a moratorium on the executive orders that the president has issued, like stopping funding, moratorium on the funding for the border wall, you know, things like that where he can move decisively, he is. But I think that he wants to make sure that, you know, there are no missteps, right? First do no harm, and that the attention is laser focused where he wants it to be.
Interesting. And some people already saying that they wished that President Biden had gone a little further when it came to doing something about border construction. It seems like he's wanting to examine or explore what contracts are currently in existence right now. On a related topic, we're talking about immigration issues here. It appears that the president has bolstered the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Basically, though, it seems that this order is calling on Congress to enact legislation providing permanent status and a path to citizenship for those in the DACA program. And I'm curious, do you think that the expectations will match the realities and limitations of the president's executive power here, Professor Huerta?
Well, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, we've been trying to pass various types of immigration reform legislation for a while now. And I think DACA is, and extending it, it's an opening move. It's a first step. And I think one thing it does is it reduces the anxiety for a lot of, you know, DACA recipients, the Dreamers, that they do have some more stability with this. And I think part of it, again, it's part of the negotiation that they're doing, and also sending a strong signal that we're going to do something about this.
A return to the Paris Climate Accords, a revocation of the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, reversing the rollbacks to vehicle emission standards. I wonder if a lot of folks in the energy industry in Texas have cause to be concerned about the Biden administration just based on what he has done in the first 24 hours of his administration. Professor Dean, what's your sense of that?
Oh, I think that's right. And I think that they were worried about that from the get-go, you know, all the way back to the campaign. That's an issue. The environment is something that he campaigned on during the transition. His transition website focused on four issues, and the environment was one of them. And so he's just following through with what he said he was going to do.
Big picture, first full day of a Biden-Harris administration. How do you see the first 100 days of his White House playing out? Professor Dean, let me return to you for this one.
Oh man, right? I mean, we are balanced between wondering if he can have this kumbaya bipartisanness that he's hoping for, that he wishes for, and then kind of the cold realities of Washington and partisan politics. We've already seen Senator Cruz, for example, come out and bash some of his early immigration steps. So cautiously optimistic is how I see it.
Professor Huerta?
Well, one advantage that President Biden comes in with that President Trump didn't have was he has higher approval ratings starting out. So he may have that honeymoon period in his administration where he can get things done. And he does have, there's a lot of challenges facing us. And I'm suspecting that he's going to have some goodwill and people looking for some type of a plan when we're dealing with, you know, the COVID-19 and how we can, you know, get some kind of direction and get vaccines rolled out. So like Professor Dean, cautiously optimistic.
Carlos Huerta, professor of political science, Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. Also, Rebecca Dean, chair of the political science department at the University of Texas in Arlington. Thanks to you both. We certainly do appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.